It is the nature of our beings as individuals that defines the quality and power of the statement. By focusing on each breath, we are affirming the dignity of life in the simplest way possible. We extend our compassion to those everywhere who live in fear of nuclear annihilation, and may we all experience clarity of mind and learn to share it constructively with each other. Now, social action is only one part of the dance, because what you and I face is we face anywhere from another 5 minutes to, in some cases, maybe another 50 years of experiences in life. And those experiences may go in any direction. There may be some terrible Holocaust. Maybe there'll be a nuclear bomb dropped in Chicago, and it'll spread over every place, and all of us will become diseased and will become crippled and maimed, and we'll spend years in suffering. And maybe there'll be years of peace and prosperity, and we will all have to deal with the experiences of plenty and the discontinuity of us having plenty and others not. We are part of a society in which we are 6% of the world's population, and we are using something like 45% of the natural resources. And the question is, can you get to God on that? And you've got to stay conscious at all these levels all at once. But along whatever experiences are going to come down the pike, as people say to me, do you think there's going to be, is the Armageddon coming? Or is this the Aquarian Age and it's all starting? Are we at the beginning of the New Age, or is it all going to hell? And I answer sort of like Ramana Maharshi answered. Ramana Maharshi's answer was, what are you worried about the future for? You can't even be in the present. Okay. Because if you're in the present moment, that's the best preparation you can do for being in the future, for whatever the future will hold. If you're living right here consciously, that's the optimum strategy for preparing for the future. Because if you tell me, like if I say to you, the world is going to end, the bomb has been, I just have information that the bomb has been, the button has been pushed and the bombers are coming and there is one headed for Yucca Valley. And it's going to land here in like 3 minutes. What are you going to do? Go to the toilet? You're going to call home? You're going to pray? Because everything you have been up to this moment, it's that thing about Gandhi and the railway station, my life is my message. That was his message. My life is my message. Whatever you are at this moment has to be ready to die and ready to live. And if you're not, you get on with it, because that's the only thing you can do for however the world's going to come out. So, you and I are going to have the opportunity to have lots of experiences and use them until we get totally liberated, which means the end of our identification with the experiencer. And at that moment, our experiences end because there's nobody to experience them. Then you might hang around and they'll just be form, there'll be manifestation coming out of you, but you don't have to worry anymore because you're just God, you're just one with God. Okay, these are stages. Now, what we've done at this retreat is we have provided a smorgasbord. Some of you have found it perhaps chaotic or confusing because you would have liked a simple way that would be comfortable. But we've provided a smorgasbord of various strategies and techniques, methods, for becoming more conscious, for quieting your mind and opening your heart. And every one of them, the reason we presented them is they're coming from the beings of the people that are doing them. When Wavy is a clown, that clownness comes from his deepest being. That's his expression of compassion. When Lakshmi shares art with you, that is her vehicle for tuning to God. When Jai sings, he is singing to God, and we are all sharing that process. When Maruti teaches Tai Chi, it is because Tai Chi is working for him. Ramdev meditates each day because that's his doorway through. So he teaches it from a place where it works for him. Soma works with the images and the beings on other planes, and that's the way she liberates herself and provides space for other people. Stephen, Ganga, serve. Besides meditating, they work with people daily who are suffering, and through service there is liberation. And Vajra works with a tape library, and through providing service of tapes to share with people, it's a vehicle for coming to God. And Chaitanya, through his slides, through his poetry, through the way he lives life, just lightens the whole dance for everyone. Just lightens it. Each person is saying, here I am, you're welcome to have me. You're welcome to have my way of being with living truth. And so you must hear your way. And your way may be very eclectic. Mine is. I go over to Lakshmi and she has me painting a sound, and I can feel myself getting into the spirit through doing that. I hang out with Jai all the time, and every time he sings, I just, oh. I know that service is one of the highest things that I do for clearing my mind, because when you're sitting with somebody that's dying, all your bullshit is irrelevant, and you just got to come right to the edge of your being all over again. It demands it. And Tara, through her movement, through her tuning to the body, and her service, she is a statement. She is living her statement. I can say of this staff, there isn't one error in this game. Every being of this staff is here out of love and compassion and doing their dharma. That's just the way it is. To me, that's a joyful kind of relationship and working relationship. And this is our lives. It's not like we do this and then we go back to living. This is it. This is what it's about. It's not 9-day retreats. It's called life. You call it a 9-day segment. Why is this part of your life any different than any other one? You think you're going to say, well, now it's over, now I'll go, what, back? Back to what? Living is a state of mind. It's a state of mind. And it's just all going to be more of the same and more of the same. And as the mind changes, it's all going to change. And as you give up the clinging to models, the whole scene is going to change. So I would suggest to you that you really assess how quiet your mind is, and how deeply you understand the nature of incarnation, the nature of identity, the nature of dharma, And if the mind is agitated, find ways to quiet it. Maybe you'll be drawn to meditation courses or finding a group that meditates in your community. Just sitting one night a week or 20 minutes in the morning, join TM, it doesn't matter. They'll all quiet your mind. Or maybe because you're a very rajasic, you're a very active person, you're going to have to find a quieting method that involves use of your body. And what you'll do, perhaps, is you'll do Tai Chi or something like that. That's a meditation. Hatha Yoga. Every time you get into an asana or a pose, it's a meditative statement. You've got to bring your mind there as well as your body. It's a quieting. If you don't understand enough, you may want to read and study. Just have some holy books around. I put the title in the cookbook of books to hang out with. Called it Books to Hang Out With in Be Here Now. These were books that were like friends. I don't know who your friends are, but my friends are Christ, and they're Buddha, and they're Maharaji, and they're Ramana Maharshi, and Ramakrishna, and Chuang Tzu, and Lao Tzu, and the Third Patriarch, and Hazrat Inayat Khan, and Solomon, and on and on and on. Those are my buddies. I hang out with a very elite group of people. And I have their writings around. And their writings, because every statement is a statement of being, and you can go through any statement. What would it be more if they shook my hand? Would I know them better than if I heard a word that came out of their heart? And I can sit down, and if I'm quiet and open, I can pick up the words of any of these beings. And in a moment, I have just gotten a whole new level of wisdom. Let's see what I got to read to you. Where are they gone? Can't read you anything. Yeah, I'll read you an excerpt. See, most people expect that when I say you got to study and read, it's going to be some heavy tract. This is one of my favorite books. It's called Heart of a Gopi by this wonderful Sufi lady who died. She was in Delhi. Her name was Rehana, and she was at least 6,000 years old, and she eyes way back in her head. She wrote this just very simple book about the gopi, this girl who was married and who fell in love with Krishna. Right? And she'd go to the river every day to wash her saris and the clothes and to fetch water and to she'd hang out with all the girls there, the gopis. And pretty soon Krishna started to appear and he'd play the flute and he was kind of this rascally young, beautiful boy in blue, with blue. He was blue colored. And he'd play with them all the time, and they just feel this incredible love. So finally she's talking to her husband, whose name is Nath, N-A-T-H. And Nath's trying to understand what's happened to her. She says, "And now, Nath, mine ears are perpetually haunted by his voice, and all of Vrindavan is become but a mirror of his matchless beauty. Beauty so perfect that it may not even be dreamed of by mere mortals. Ah, my heart, ah. There is no longer a heart in Sharmila's breast." Her name is Sharmila. There was a long silence, and then, "And what about me, Sharmila?" asked my husband. "Never, never, no, never have I loved thee as I do now," I rejoined instantly and with vigor. "What? Ah, Nath, none may understand this save lovers of God alone." "Well, I cannot understand, it is true, and I'm afraid. Sharmila, I'm afraid," and shuddering, he hid his face with his two hands. He was jealous of her love of God. My Lord, said I solemnly, look deep into my eyes and listen well to each word I say. And if I speak but the shadow of a falsehood, may Krishna never appear to these eyes again. In the sight of that almighty God whom thou worshipest, I say to thee this, did Sharmila not love thee with a love as pure as that of Sita for Sri Ram, as fathomless as the ocean, as vast as eternity, never, never could she love Sri Krishna. And if she did not love Sri Krishna, never, no, never could she love thee with the love thou deservest. It is not just thy body that I love, it is thy soul. I love thee for thy strong goodness and sweetness and strength of thy soul. I love thee for thy manhood, for thy virtue, for thy intellect, for thy skill, for thy tenderness, for thy simplicity, for thy truth, for thy steadfastness. And all this, every single one of these qualities is Krishna. All is Krishna. All is Krishna. So you read that and you work with that one. And you see that the more I love God, the more I will love the forms of God. Okay? And then you read this, and you got to work with it all. Try this one from Don Juan. In other words, a man of knowledge has no honor, no dignity, no family, no name, no country, but only life to be lived. And under these circumstances, his only tie to his fellow men is his controlled folly. Thus a man of knowledge endeavors and sweats and puffs, and if one looks at him, he is just like any ordinary man, except that the folly of his life is under control. Nothing being any more important than anything else. A man of knowledge chooses any act and acts it out as if it mattered to him. As if it mattered. His controlled folly makes him say that what he does matters and makes him act as if he did, and yet he knows that it doesn't. So when he fulfills his acts, he retreats in peace. And whether his acts are good or not, or worked or didn't, is in no way part of his concern. One of those is devotional yoga, and one of them is jnana yoga. And for you to be free, you must hear both of those finally. Because you must honor parents, and you must honor your relationships in the world, and a lot of them aren't going to want to share consciousness with you that way, and that'll be the fire of your purification. It's great. And when you tune to your body and you find out that my body has gotten short shrift, as mine has, I haven't honored my body properly. And the result is that my body pulls on my consciousness a lot. Because at times it's too heavy. At times it's too dense. At times my energies aren't flowing properly. Because I've treated it just as a thing for carrying my head around and my heart. And you can't do that, because that's God too. And even if you've got a marred body or a broken body or a hurt body or any kind of a body, you learn how to honor that too. And I find that I have to become more conscious of my body and what I eat, how I move it, what I do with it, how I spend its time. because there's a very delicate balancing act between mind, body, and heart. And you can't get so preoccupied with one, you forget the others, because they'll take its toll. Take its toll. And in terms of what to eat, you eat what your intuitive sense tells you to eat. And at different stages in the spiritual journey, you need a different kind of diet. There will be a time when, like Teresa Neumann, you will live on light alone. She lived on one Eucharist wafer and light for 12 years. One Eucharist wafer every morning. And you don't get much nourishment out of that on the physical plane. World Health Organization would be shocked at the protein intake. But as long as you need protein, you take protein. If you're living a sedentary life because you're in a meditative atmosphere, you have one diet. If you're living an active life, you have another diet. It's not a good and evil issue. It's a tuning and then honoring the food and honoring where it comes from. Brahmapanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagni, Brahmanahuta, Brahmaitan, Gantabhya, Brahmakamra, Samadina. And you begin to notice what you fill your head with. And I've sat, I remember Trungpa Rinpoche and I once sat together and he said, Ram Dass, just expand outward. And I started to expand outward. And then he said, he was sitting right up, so we were looking into each other's eyes. And he said, I think you're still holding. I said, you're trying, he said. I said, yeah, I'm trying. He said, no, don't try, just expand outward. And we expanded outward and it all became very disappearing, luminous, present. And then I said, Rinpoche, what should I do? I'm going into a retreat for 2 weeks. I'm rented a cabin in Arizona. What should I do? And he said, just sit quietly. I said, should I take books on my tambora? No, no, don't take anything. Just go sit. So I went to the place and I went to sit. It just turned out there was a television set in the cabin. And I ended up spending 2 weeks looking at television and drinking beer and taking baths. Right? And hating myself, and sitting with all of it, the beer and the television and the baths and the hatred. And I was just burning out this, because I tried putting the television in the closet. And then I'd think, well, I just ought to watch the news, and I'd bring it out for the news, and then the news would stand privileged reason. It was 14 hours later. I was still looking at television. And I thought, well, I'm just burning out something. And I felt at the end, in a way, that I needed more to do. I mean, it might be rationalization, but it felt to me like I just needed, I did what I did. It's just what I did. You didn't even have to say I needed it more. Just, I did what I did. I did what I did. I'm getting a lot of mileage off what Gandhi talked about as experiments in truth. In truth. Experiments in truth. He wrote his book, his autobiography was called Experiments in Truth. Just learning how to be truthful, how to be straight about with yourself, about where you're at.